Mr. Tommy Wilmot, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Wilmot?
I was born in 1918. The 1418 war was still going on when I was born, because it was April 1918, the 13th of April. And I was born in Dundee. And I was born at home, in a tenement, because that's the reason it happened in 1918. And I lived there in Ewer Street, Dundee, and just carried on until I went to school after that.
How many were there in your family?
There were parents, brother and sister. And then 17 years later, another brother appeared and I wondered where he came from. And he's still alive.
And what about your family circumstances? I mean, what did your father do for a living?
My father was a plasterer. Hard-working man, you know, really, just seemed to get up. His whole life seemed to be getting married, having a family, and working and dying. And it seemed, when you look back at it from today, it seems these people were different people altogether. And he never wanted anything because there was nothing here. It was just simply work, produce some money, and bring up his family. That's what it was.
So you were reasonably well-fed, clothed, housed,
well,
the rest of it?
Yes, but that was it. There was no problems in that. Mind you, it was only what was called a button bend in these days. A button bend was a two-room house where the button bend is a very place in Scotland, and there was the kitchen where the parents lived, and we ate, and the fireplace was there, and all that. And there was and the bend part was the bedroom, which everybody lived in. The three children lived there because there was the three of us. You see, one girl and two boys, and that went on from I must have been about. 10, 11, 12, and then we had to move to another house because I had two bedrooms, you see, and we moved not far away, just up the road a bit.
Still in Dundee?
In Dundee, oh yes, and we had two bedrooms then, still an outside lavatory, even with a two bedroom house, it was an outside lavatory.
Now, what about your education?
Well, education was funny, because there was a whole, for a start, we were one of the things that happened in these days. My father came from a Catholic family, and my mother came from a Protestant family. And of course, that was a problem, very much so in these days, and there was a great family scandal. And so the education was difficult.
Hang on, well, that's quite interesting. I mean, was there a big religious divide in Dundee?
There certainly was. I mean, there was no big fighting, other than the fact when you had a mixed marriage. I mean, when the marriage was not mixed, there was a great family on both sides. But a mixed marriage was the one that caused the problem, as I can see in looking back.
And what way, how did the two families, I mean, did they sort of bury the hatchet, or did they...
No, the hatchet wasn't really buried, because my mother's parents seemed, I never knew them. They seemed to give up. When she married a Catholic, that was it. She was more or less, she left the unit. But my father's parents, the Catholic parents, they were strong, and they wanted us completely involved with them. But my mother was the strong character of our family, and she just decided that, no, that was not to be. We would live like her way, without anything. We still went to visit Grandma on a Saturday morning, but there was nothing other than that. But there was always, as I was growing up, and as the oldest, coming up to 5-year-old in schooling, and that's when the problem started.
Now, tell me about that then, your education.
My mother insisted that we would go to the school that she wanted us to go to.
Which was?
Because of the fact that, in her opinion, the education side of the schooling was going to be better, as it would have been in a Catholic school. So she put me first and then the other to a school which was mixed up with St Andrews University. It was called the Dundee Training College. And it was a funny thing. It was in Park Place, Dundee, and it was kind of mixed up with the St Andrews University, because there was no Dundee University.
And that was your primary school?
No, this was me going to school all day. Yes, that's why, primary school, that's right. This was me starting going to school all day, and my brother, who was a year younger than me, he followed me there, and my sister, who was about a year younger than him, she followed him there. And then, of course, this caused the family squabble, because once the education started, my grandmother, my father's mother, was absolutely adamant that this was not to be. Priests came to the house and all sorts of things couldn't happen. And my mother then had to give way. And she gave way by saying to me, won't let you go to a Catholic school, but the other two will stay in training college. So I just thought, well, my mum was like, because I went to a Catholic school, and for about 3 or 4 years, I really didn't like it at all. And eventually, it must have been about 3 years through this Catholic, because I went to Catholic Church, and had to get confirmed and all this kind of thing, and I was the only one that was doing it in the family, you see. And my brother and sister were still going to training college. And eventually, it just got to me. And my mother realised this, and she just put her foot down, and I went back to training college. And that, more or less, was the end of the road of any association with my parents from my father's parents, you see. And my father, I must say, he absolutely stood back from the entire thing. Totally. He wasn't all that much of a family member of his parents, you know. He was always old man out. And he married my mother, and that was a mistake, if that was ever. And he stood back. He took no sign at all. He left everything alone. And she was gone. And she decided that I must have been about 9 or 10, about 8 or 9 times. And she said, no, that's it. We've tried your food. We've put him to the Catholic school. It hasn't worked. I won't have him anymore. And so I went there. And I finished off at the Dundee Training College. Now, the Dundee Training College was a separate thing. As I said, it was in some way mixed up with the university. And they had their own way of training. And they had their own methods. I said, we were doing things at school, pathways, that they didn't do at any other school. Tests and all this kind of stuff, which I loved. And we had all these things that happened in there until I was 12. Now, at 12, another thing happened. They decided that the Dundee school people decided that the Dundee Training College couldn't have them after 12. They had to go into the normal schooling. And I then arrived at a secondary school in Dundee, what's called a secondary school now, Logie Central. And I was in deep trouble because I couldn't write other than my name. Because at the school I was brought up in, we printed. Everything was in printing. And when I arrived at the school, I can remember it clearly. And Miss Kerr said, you can't write well. She says, you'll be writing soon. Well, I had a real tough time with her, but Miss Edwards, the English teacher there. But she brought me up when I started to get into swim. And from there I went on. And when I was 12 then, I said, I wanted a bike. You know, we were living reasonably. There was no money for bikes. So I decided I'd better go to work. And I said, well, if I get a job, can I have a bike, you see? And that was it. So my father said to me, well, you get a job, and I'll take a bike home, you know, pay it up.
A part-time job?
Oh, yes, 12-year-old. I started working 12-year-old, 1930, I may tell you. And I could, jumping ahead, I worked there until 1983.
Now, what was your part-time job?
A message boy, £5 a week.
And who was that for?
Lawson's Limited, a big family business they had. They were a family business, and they'd shops in Southampton, and they'd shops in Aberdeen, Dundee. It was amazing. But me in 1930, as I was watching it later on, it was a unique situation. They had this big family business, and they were credit as well, which was unique. They were one of the early credit companies, started in 1856, because I became a great member of the family business, because I worked from message boy to control eventually, you see, when I finished. And I started there at £5 a week. And I said, well, the £5, every week I got £5 in an envelope, not given to me, in an envelope with a little code. This is Lawson's business, you see. And I took her home, she got the £5, and that helped me get a bike. And also gave her money over the bar, so I was really supporting, helping to support the family in 1930.
Now, what was your job as message boy? What would you do?
Well, I report to the shop at 5 o'clock at night. The shop was in the centre of Dundee. And I was delivering all the parcels that they needed delivery to a suburb called Lockie. At 5 o'clock, I got a whole parcel tied up and on my back, you know, strung on my back, and away I went to deliver them. I got the tram car out to Lockie and delivered them, usually from the far end, working my way back to the city centre. And I delivered them all, and I was, when I was finished, I had to go back to the shop. And the shop was open until 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock at night, I got another load of parcels to deliver. And I went out and delivered them, and when they were delivered, I was finished. When the start could be 8 or 8:15, so that was from 5 o'clock. I did that on Mondays and Tuesdays. Wednesdays they didn't work. Thursdays, I used to go at 5 and get a parcel to deliver. I had to go back at 7, but the shop was open to 8, so I had to stay late. and I didn't get my second delivery till 8 o'clock. Friday was 5 to 7. Saturday, now listen to this one, I started at 8 in the morning on Saturday, 12-year-old, and worked till 8 o'clock at night. And when I left the shop at 8 o'clock at night, I left with the parcel to deliver. And you can work all that out for 5 shillings a week. However, I was very happy because I had this fine bob which I handed to my mother without opening the envelope. She got my envelope every week. But I, delivering parcels, became a champion getting tips. And eventually, I must have been the richest 12-year-old, 30-year-old in Dundee because I was making pennies and pounds and silver sovereigns. By the incredible, I was really, it was a world of silver. And I had all this money, and it was great. And that was life, you see. And when you went there, now listen to this, if you want this stuff. When you went there, you thought delivering parcels and getting that would just be it. It wasn't. There were senior message boys who said to me, no, you have to learn. Now, when you're going up to a house, you have a book. And on this book, the customer signs for the parcel. Now he says, you never have a pencil. I said, no. He says, you go up, and he says, I've lost my pencil, Mrs. Whatever. And so she had to go into the house to get her pencil. Now, when she went into the house to get her pencil, she usually finds a purse. And when she finds her purse, she thinks she'd better give you a penny or a pound. You see, I just thought, isn't that great? Now he says, another thing I can tell you, this is the senior message boy, you know. Great thing. He says, if it's raining, you just wait till you see a drip coming down from the tenement, and you stand under it and let it hit you on the head until the water's fiddling down your head. So he says, when you get to the door, people are going to feel real sorry for you. Up, we'll cover it up. So I learned very early that this was the way to live. Pick somebody's brains out, somebody would tell you, and you live. And that was it. Now, by this time, I really was enjoying life. My mum was getting a pay packet from 12-year-old, which was something. I was getting these tips, which made me totally independent. Now, I left school at 14.
Now, how did you do it? Nipping back to school. How did you do at school? I mean, were there any subjects you particularly liked? Or
geography, absolutely. Loved it. History, totally loved it. Maths, I was all right. That was it. The rest I just worked out. But geography, history, and maths.
Was there ever any possibility of you staying on at school or trying to take...
There wasn't any at all. You see, in actual fact, there wasn't me going on to be a professional, as I could see that. So I decided, and I was in an organisation which had shops from Aberdeen to Southampton, and Sheffield. I had a shop in Sheffield, you see, and I had two in London. So you see, I was already set on a ladder, although I didn't realise it at the time. I was in Lawson's Limited, and working hard, well liked, no problem, you see. So I decided that I would just stay in Lawson's. So at 14, I decided to become a full-time message boy, the chap who got me on the tricks. So I was him, you see, and I worked there until I was 16. Always on the delivery business, in the dispatching area, if you might say.
So you left school to go there in
1930, I started. That's right, I very won. And I, when I was 14, I became a full-time message boy. 30, I was 12-year-old, which was dead right.
Now, so how did your career go at Lawson's?
Well, at Lawson's, that was it. Eventually, because I got my clothes, good discount off them, you see, it was a bit, my mother had to come into the shop when I was buying outfits or this and all that. And I was really well liked. I can still members of the staff today. And at 16, they came to me and said, would you like to become an apprentice salesman, you see, in the jets department? So there it was. Jets department I just automatically fell into the jets department. And that was it. And I worked on there. And I remember the next biggest thing in my life, in 1938, of course, I was in the jets department. And it was a very progressive company. Mr. Lawson, who was in charge of it, he decided that he needed window display people, you see. And in 1938, he says to me, why would you like to go to London? And in 1938, I was 20. I'll send you to London, he says, for 4 weeks to a display school. We'll look after you. And so I went down, and he sent three other ones from other branches, and we all went down to London, and that was me at the German school, the Ryman School of Display, Vauxhall Bridge Road, London. And it's in a German school. They taught us all the techniques of window display. At night I used to go to Derry and Dom's next to Harrods, work late at night. We used to go to Selfridges, we used to go to DHMs, we used to go to these, and they worked all through these shops. We were there for 4 weeks doing this. We got our wages and small expenses. We took it to London, and we lived in London, and that was my first place again. Imperial Royal Museum, I can assure you, I was there in 1938. All the museums in London, for a start, it was something you could do the weekend because it didn't cost us anything, you see, because you got them for nothing. So I went all through all the new museums, every one of them could walk through London, could still walk through London, and all these, and that was it. And that took me up to 38. Then we come into the major year, of course, which was 39. In 39,
Now, just before we go to 30, had you got any particular hobbies that you developed or interests? Yeah,
well,
like sport?
Well, of course, I joined the Boys' Brigade, which was a great thing.
Now, tell me about your Boys' Brigade activities.
Well, I was in the Life Boys before them. So I joined the Life Boys when I was about 8, 9. But you didn't get into Boys' Brigade until you were 12. So I joined the Boys' Brigade about the same time as I joined the Orphan Village, you see. And the Joyce Brigade was just another thing I got into, like Mawson's. I wasn't long in the Boys Brigade, and I was Lance Corporal Sergeant, you see, in the Boys Brigade. Liked the Boys Brigade, loved it, went to the camps. Did you
have a uniform?
Yes, we had the white bandolier with a Boys Brigade belt, and of course in Scotland, I don't know about England, we wore the little pie hats to begin with. Now, when I joined the Boys Brigade in 1930, they still had the wooden rifles that they used for parades, but they were stopped about 1930-31, and I lost them. But the wooden rifles were still kept in a little cupboard, and the Boys Brigade in the 20s must have used these for order arms, present arms, and everything. But I didn't stop it just as I joined.
Now, what were your weekly activities? I'll come to summer camp later, but what would you do in the Boys Brigade normally, you know, during the week?
What did I do in this?
The Boys Brigade. Yeah. I mean, how many would there be a sort of drill night or what?
There was a Friday night with Boys Brigade night. No doubt about that. That was the night we arrived at the hall. We did our parades. We did our drills, and we did our anything that was being taught. We did on Friday nights. Bible class was on Sunday, of course, because we were still heavily connected to the church. The church halls was where we kept the. Where we did our lot training. 38 company of the Boys Brigade was in the Russell Congregational Church. So we were there, you see. And my brother, of course, was following me up through the Life Boys and Boys Brigade. He came after me.
Well, what about the summer camps?
I was in the Boys Brigade before the war. Yeah? So you see, I was enjoying it.
And the summer camps for the Boys
summer
Brigade?
Summer camps were in July, the Dundee Holiday Week. We went to a battalion camp in Belmont. And again, local business people used to come and help us. It's amazing. We went to these. We usually built a bridge, you know, over an imaginary river. We had to build a bridge. And by the end of the week, we were walking over that bridge. So that took me up to 39. The other thing is, other than working and schooling, there was all the other Band of Hope. You had to go to these things because there was nothing else to do. If you weren't a member of the Band of Hope or the Salvation Army Club or the Boys' Brigade, then at Christmas time you didn't get into any parties because everything was dovetailed out of these little organizations.
What was the Band of Hope?
Band of Hope, yes.
What was it?
It was a church that we did. It must be the Band of Hope. And then there was another one. I can't remember. But we went to any organization where.
Were you in the Boy Scouts?
No, Boy Scouts were totally, totally opposite to the Boy Brigade.
Now, in what way?
Well, there wasn't many of them for a start in Scotland, certainly. And they weren't so much church motivated. They were away from being church motivated, I think. And they did camps, more or less weekend camps. We didn't do these things at all, you see. See, the Boy Brigade basically was a church organisation. It was funded by Mr. Smith. A Glasgow man, that's his Brock Smith. And I remember the Jubilee they had, the special songs in Glasgow, which we wrote as a company, and the Glasgow Jubilee was in the 50s, and that was 50 years. And they did all that.
Now, what about sport? Were you interested at all?
Well, football, of course, was great in the Boys' Brigade. We had our own team, but I was never good at it. So if I wasn't good at it, I didn't want to get too heavily involved. Let my friends do that. No.
Now, we come back to 1939 then.
But 1939, well, this is when the world started to open up.
Were you aware by then of what was going on in Germany, of Hitler, of things like that?
I thought we were, but in actual fact, the first time I became aware of anything happening at all was when we found out that Conscription Act was passed by a chap called Joe Militia Gross at the time. He was the war minister, I believe. And we decided and we realised that we were going, conscription was going to be a way of life. And it was also going to hit the 21s. Well, I was 21 in 1939, you see. So a few pals of mine and I was in, what's this? And then we discovered that with the Conscription Act, there was a clause in it which said, if you joined the Territorial Army, you were excused conscription, as I recall. So we now worked this out that we would be far better to join the Territorial Army and therefore avoid conscription. And this happened prior, it must be April 39, because in July 39, I was at my first territorial camp.
So now, you'd come back to, so in 39, you'd come back to Dundee.
Yeah.
And back, still working with Lawson.
You're talking about after the war?
No. This is in 1939.
Oh, I'm still working with Lawson. Yeah. This time I was in the gents department, a qualified assistant, and also doing the windows, remember?
And so it was conscription, the threat of it, that made you decide to join up.
Conscription came along, and you're asking, today, would we have known there was something happening in Afghanistan or something? No, I didn't really know at all. We lived Dundee and that was it, and somebody tells you there's going to be conscription and there's going to be trouble and this will be in April 39. And my main object of getting out of this was I didn't want to join the Black Watch, because if you lived in Dundee in the north, the Black Watch was automatic, you see, and my father served through the 1418 war in the Black Watch. And of course, being tall and skinny, I didn't like the kilt very much. I was determined not to join the Black Watch. And of course, we discovered then we were going to join the Territorials simply to avoid being called up for 6 months. That was what we didn't want to do. Then we realised and we found out, because we were becoming interested then, that the Territorial Army was to be doubled. This must have been April 39 as well. And we discovered it's going to be doubled. So we're the best thing we do is double up. So what would we join? Black Watch was out. So we looked around and we found out that the 5th and 4th were doubling up the squadron in Dundee at the top of the hill town in Joe Grimmins' work. Joe Grimmins, who became leader of the Liberal Party, remember? Well, it was in his father's jute mill. So we promptly, and I'm talking about 6 of us, because we worked in little groups, you see, so we all decided to go up. Eventually it came down to about 4, joined the 5th and 4th of Germany. We went up, answered all the questions.
Do you remember much about the procedure for enlisting?
We went up to go in, and we were interviewed there, and the next thing that was necessary was we had to get a medical, I think. And so we were sent to a doctor, we had to go to the doctor's office, and we were looked at, and he very quickly said, yeah, you're all right. So we went back, and we had to sign up on an attestation paper. I got mine, by the way. I managed to get it out of the records, and I've got it at home. My attestation, where my army number was then put at the top. In once they got them all, they put your army 7893 68 was put at the top in large letters and figures. And I got mine at home, so that was it. And we were then in the 5th and 4th.
As a trooper.
As a trooper, yes, that's right.
And where this jute mill, where were which squadron had you joined?
HQ was formed in Dundee. This is the 2nd Regiment. The 1st Regiment wasn't HQ in Dundee, but the 2nd Regiment was to be HQ in Dundee, and A, B, and C squadrons were in St Andrews, Cooper, and Kirkcaldy. So we didn't know about these, of course. I mean, they were formed of us, A, B, and C squadrons, really, at that time in April. But we were joining HQ squadron, and of course, we had thought that they would teach us to drive as well, possibly, which was a thing that was beginning to happen in 1939. And one of the things that always I laugh at to think is, I don't know the percentage, but it must have been about 90-something% who joined the 5th and 4th when it couldn't drive at all, because there was hardly anybody drove in 1939. So we had a mechanised unit being formed, with 90-odd% of them unable to drive. So you realise that was one of the very first steps you had to do, learn to drive. What did you do?
Now, what was, before we get onto that, how did they kit you out with a uniform?
Well, it was practically non-existent. As I remember, they got a few battle dresses, and there's still a lot of stuff left over from the first line, maybe surplus they had, of the tunics with the buttons. You know, some of my friends got the tunics, and I got a battle dress anyway. They couldn't have tunics for me. And they had the buttons on them, of course, back and forth buttons on them, and they had that. They didn't supply a great deal at all. To begin with, I can't remember having them, you know. I'm talking about April and May. But we certainly had them by July. We had uniforms of something, because in July we went to our first battalion.
And what about kitting out with any equipment? Did you get any personal equipment?
We had to supply that ourselves, but we got paid for it, as I recall. You know, they paid us so much for supplying our shaving kit and our other kits and whatnot. They paid us for that.
Now, where what night was your drill night, and where would you go? Would you go to this tube?
That's the funny thing. I don't remember much of it. As I say, the first line were organised. The second line were just used, were disorganised. I don't remember anything. If every place we had to meet, it was at Joe Grimmins' mill at the top of the hill. He had a big hall up there. But I don't remember a drill night as such prior to going to wait with camp. And then, of course, we were hardly back from that when we were in the army proper.
So what training would you get in that first 3 months before July? Just driving training?
We got some driving. We had to go and sit in the back of a lorry.
Tell me about it. How did they teach you to drive then? I mean, you know, how did they go about it? What were you learning to drive on?
As I recall, we were in a truck. There'd be maybe four of us in the truck. One sat beside the driver, who the person who drove, who was with you, and the other he sat in the back. And we used to go out into the roads in Dundee, and we got our shot driving the truck. And when you're finished, they had a double declutch. I always remember one of the great things was this double declutch. Everyone wonder why we used to do it. It was double declutch, double declutch, double. So we did that, and we did a little bit of it, and one came in the back and one came in the front.
And was that enough to teach you? Could you drive competently at the end?
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
So it was just a rough, sketchy?
Very much so.
What other training before then?
Well, we did drilling.
Basic drill? Basic foot drill. Yeah. How did you take to foot drill? Because you'd had some experience with the boys' brigade.
There's a point. I think that the British Army in these days in the period must have been very much beholden to the boys' brigade. Because it was amazing. The boys' brigade was so strong in Dundee. It was amazing the number of people in the fighting for the head squad who were also members of various boys' brigade companies. And of course, this was a major help to the drill instructors. But no.
Did you enjoy drill? I mean, did you understand the point of it then? I know you probably do now, but what about then?
No, well, I enjoyed it all right. I mean, I certainly never disliked it. And eventually, as I say, fairly soon I was able to get involved heavily in the drilling, you know, as my army career started. Now that you've talked here, I do remember when I said, how did you do? Prior to Weightless Camp, we did about two or three weekends at Ansmuir Ladybank. That's where we did it. That's where we didn't. See, we didn't. We had to remember we were the poor relations because the first line were organised, you see. And we went to Ansmuir in Ladybank, which was not very far away.